Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 6, the demigods and demons declare a truce. And I guess we'll read the summary. So the 8th canto has a lot to do with the heavenly planets and meant to be a discouragement from going to the heavenly planets, not an advertisement. This chapter describes how the Lord appeared before the demigods when they offered him their prayers. Following the advice of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods executed a truce with the demons for the purpose of churning nectar from the sea. Because of the prayers offered by the demigods in the previous chapter, Lord Shiradakashayi Vishnu was pleased with the demigods and thus appeared before them. The demigods were almost blinded by his transcendental bodily effulgence. At first, therefore, they could not even see any part of his body. After some time, however, when Lord Brahma could see the Lord, he along with Lord Shiva began to offer the Lord prayers. Lord Brahma said, Supreme Personality of Godhead, being beyond birth and death, is eternal. He has no material qualities. Yet he is the ocean of unlimited auspicious qualities. He is subtler than the most subtle. He is invisible, and his form is inconceivable. He is worshipable for all the demigods. Innumerable universes exist within his form, and therefore he is never separated from these universes by time, space, or circumstances. He is the chief and the pradhana. Although he is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the material creation, the idea of pantheism conceived by the Mayavadi philosophers has no validity. The Supreme Personality of Godhead controls the entire material manifestation through his subordinate agent, the external energy. Because of his inconceivable transcendental position, he is always the master of the material energy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his various forms, is always present even within this material world. But the material qualities cannot touch him. One can understand his position only by his instructions as given in the Bhagavad Gita. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10.10, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Buddhi Yoga means Bhakti Yoga. Only through the process of Bhakti Yoga can one understand the Supreme Lord. When offered prayers by Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was pleased. Thus he gave appropriate instructions to all the demigods. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Ajita, unconquerable, advised the demigods to make a peace proposal to the demons, so that after formulating a truce, the demigods and demons could churn the ocean of milk. The rope would be the biggest serpent known as Vasuki, and the churning rod would be Mandara Mountain. Poison would be also produced from the churning, but it would be taken by Lord Shiva, and so there would be no need for it, to fear it. Many other attractive things would be generated by the churning, but the Lord warned the demigods not to be captivated by such things. Nor should the demigods be angry if there were some disturbances. After advising the demigods in this way, the Lord disappeared from the scene. Following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods established a peace with Bali Maharaj Bali, the king of the demons. Then both of the demons and the demigods started for the ocean, taking Mandara Mountain with them. Because of the great heaviness of the mountain, the demigods and demons became fatigued, and some of them actually died. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, appeared on the back of his carrier Garuda, and by his mercy he brought those demigods and demons back to life. The Lord then lifted the mountain with one of his hands and placed it on the back of Garuda. The Lord sat on the mountain and was carried to the spot of the churning by Garuda, who placed the mountain in the middle of the ocean, or the middle of the sea. Then the Lord asked Garuda to leave that place because as long as Garuda was present, Vasuki could not come there. Text 1. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, the Supreme Personality of God at Hari, being thus worshipped with prayers by the demigods and Lord Brahma, appeared before them. His bodily effulgence resembled the simultaneously rising of thousands of suns. The vision of all the demigods was blocked by the Lord's effulgence. Thus they could see neither the sky, the directions, nor the land, nor even themselves. What to speak of seeing the Lord who was present before them? Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva, saw the crystal clear personal beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose bodily, blackish body resembled a Marakata gem, whose eyes were reddish like the depths of a lotus, who was dressed with garments and that are yellow like molten gold, and whose entire body is attractively decorated. They saw his beautiful, smiling, lotus-like face, crowned by a helmet bedecked with valuable jewels. The Lord has attractive eyebrows, and his cheeks are adorned with earrings. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva saw the belt on the Lord's waist, the bangles on his arms, the necklace on his chest, and the ankle bells on his legs. The Lord is bedecked with flower garlands. His neck is decorated with a Kastubha gem, and he carries with him the goddess of fortune and his personal weapons, like the disc and club. When Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva and the other demigods, that saw the form of the Lord, they all immediately fell to the ground, offering their obeisances. Text 8. Sri Brahma Vacha. Ajata Janma Stiti Samyamaya. Gunaya Nirvana Sukarnavaya. Anur anime pariganya damne. Mahanubhavaya namo namaste. Sri Brahma uvacha. Lord Brahma said, Ajata janma stiti samyamaya. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never born, but whose appearance is different in different incarnations, never ceases. Agunaya, never affected by the material modes of nature. Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna. Nirvana Sukhaya Arnavaya. Under the ocean of eternal bliss, beyond material existence. Ano anime, smaller than the atom. Apariganya Damne, whose bodily features are never to be conceived by material speculation. Maha Anubhavaya, whose existence is inconceivable. Namaha, offering our obeisances. Namaha, again offering our obeisances. Namaha, again offering our obeisances. Do it at least 3 times. Te, unto you. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma said, although you are never born, your appearance and disappearance as an incarnation never ceases. Never cease. You are always free from the material qualities, and you are the shelter of transcendental bliss, resembling an ocean. Eternally existing in your transcendental form, you are the supreme subtle of the most extremely subtle. We therefore offer our respectful obeisance unto you, the Supreme, whose existence is inconceivable. Purport, the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 4:6, Ajopi san navayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swam adishtaya sambhavam yatma maya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all sentient beings, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. The following verse in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam shrijam yaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is unborn, there is no cessation in to His appearance. In different forms as incarnations like Lord Krishna and Lord Rama. Since His incarnations are eternal, the various activities performed by these incarnations are also eternal. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not appear because He is forced to do so by karma, like ordinary living entities who are forced to accept certain types of body. It is to be understood that the Lord's body and activities are all transcendental, being freed from the contamination of the material modes of nature. These pastimes are transcendental bliss to the Lord. The word aparigana damne is very significant. There is no limit to the Lord's appearance in different incarnations. All these incarnations are eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. So the translation again. Lord Brahma said, although you are never born, your appearance and disappearance as an incarnation never cease. You are always free from the material qualities, and you are the shelter of transcendental bliss, resembling an ocean. Eternally existing in your transcendental form, you are the supreme subtle of the most extremely subtle. We therefore offer our respectful obeisance unto you, the Supreme, whose existence is inconceivable. After stating in this verse that Lord Krishna is achintya, he is inconceivable, then Brahma begins to describe him. So trying to describe something which is inconceivable is also inconceivable. But, as it says in the Bhagavatam, as the birds fly in the sky, so everyone has, all birds fly in the sky to different heights. So in the same way, according to whatever Krishna reveals, one could try to describe him. So Brahma explains here that his experience is that Krishna is like an ocean, can be compared to an ocean of bliss. Where else will we have Krishna described as an ocean of bliss? Ananta. Where else do we hear every day that Krishna is like an ocean of bliss? You don't sound very convinced. What does Ananda Mudi Vardhana mean? Like what? What does Arnava mean?
Ocean.
Yes. So, increasing ocean of bliss. Guru Vastika Paris. So Brahma has experience of that, and we would like to have that experience too. Even though we may not know Krishna completely, but at least if we know him to that extent, we'd be quite satisfied. If you saw an ocean of bliss, you'd probably dive right in, right? You wouldn't even bother putting your little toe in to see if it's warm or not. And at the same time, how do we get here? Oh, I see. He says that Krishna is never born. Exactly how he came to that conclusion is that, why did Brahma come to that conclusion that Krishna is never born? What was his experience, Lord Brahma? No one knows Brahma's experience. Anyone ever read the Bhagavatam before? You can say, Ananta. Why would Brahma conclude that Krishna is never born? Yes. But who is Brahma? who is the first person in the universe? Yeah, and who came before him? Who is there? What's that? Do you know who he came from? Take a guess. Yeah, he's right. If you look up, you'll see him. So, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu was there, and Brahma was born, but Brahma was supposed to be the first person in the universe, so he can conclude that who was ever there before him was there for a long time, like forever. Since he had no birth, there was no one who gave birth, as far as he had experience, to Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. But he was the first person in the universe, because he looked around and there's nothing there. So he concluded, I must be the first one, since he created the whole thing. And appearance and disappearance as an incarnation never cease. How does Brahma know that? Hare Krishna. Anyone out there? Yes.
Because Krishna is not material, has not material body. And
yes, that's true. But what's Brahma's experience that the incarnations never cease?
Like a wave, coming again and again.
Yeah, Brahma's been around since the beginning of creation, and all he sees is every time he sees more and more incarnations. Like if you go to the ocean, you just see the waves that coming. Then you conclude that they're never going to stop. Does anyone ever go to the ocean and think, well, I wonder when the waves are going to stop? You know they're not going to stop. So similarly, Brahma has been around since the beginning of time, our time, and all he sees is one incarnation after another. So he concludes they're never going to stop. You're always free from the material qualities. I think even Bhrigu Muni discovered that when he kicked Lord Vishnu in the chest. He didn't become angry. He didn't show the slightest disturbance, which indicates absolutely pure goodness. Eternally existing in your transcendental form, you're the supreme subtle, the most extremely subtle. How do we know that Krishna is subtle? Yeah, he's everywhere in this form, in his transcendental form, in the atoms, in between the atoms. And most importantly, he's in our heart. Now, we're subtle, although we sometimes act pretty grossly. We ourselves, the soul, is quite subtle. But he's so subtle that even the subtle soul can perceive him. So therefore he decides to offer his respects. Since everyone is, by nature, Prabhupada said, even the aborigines, when they see the sun come up, they offer respects to the sun. Because it's bigger than they are. Like if you're walking down the street and some man approaches you who's 7 points, who's 2 meters bigger than you are, your natural inclination is to offer him respects. Or else you might get into some difficulty. So Krishna is so unbelievably, inconceivably great that naturally the inclination is to offer respects. Now the materialists, for them, the material nature is only material. And they offer respects to the biggest things that they could find in the material world. For that reason, the materialists, they build skyscrapers. We probably used to call skyscrapers. Because that way people will offer respect to them. Because they think they build the biggest creation. Everything else they say is just coming about by accident, but with their intelligence they've created these skyscrapers, the biggest things that exist. Because maybe one day a Timangal fish will come and swallow the skyscraper. And then they'll offer respects to the Timangal fish. But until then, everyone is trying to make themselves bigger. If you're in the jungle and say a lion attack or a bear attacks you, then what you do is you spread your arms out, not to hug the bear, but to make yourself look bigger. Because people generally respect things that are bigger than themselves. They don't want to, if you crumble up like this, then probably the bear will think, well, this is a nice snack. But if you make yourself appear to be bigger than you actually are, the bear is saying, maybe it's better off not messing with him, because otherwise I may become a snack. So that's the nature of the material world. Jiva, jivanam. That the whole dog eats dog, and smaller eats the bigger eats the smaller. So Krishna is inconceivably great, and therefore when we find out how great Krishna is, therefore our natural tendency will be to surrender to him. Now all the demons who fought against Krishna, they didn't think Krishna was so great. And even if they did, they were covered by his illusory energy. Now Putana looked at the little Krishna lying as the little baby, and she thought that this baby is so powerful, he could destroy the whole universe. But she was covered by the illusory energy, and she tried to kill him anyhow. But she was right. Similarly, when the wrestlers Mustika and Chanura were going to battle against Krishna, they said, Krishna and Balaram said, well, you know, we're just little cowherd boys. Of course, Krishna, I mean, compared to us, he was quite big. Cowherd boys at that time were approximately, I forget how much bigger than they are than we are, but at least 3 or 4 times bigger than we are. Because Sudama, I think, no, Shridham came back. Maybe he was asleep or something. And when he appeared in Kali Yuga and looked for Lord Nityananda, Lord Nityananda with his plow had to reduce him down to a normal size. So Krishna and Balaram were actually quite big. It is said, at least, that generally speaking, the Kshatriya is around 6 meters high. Although Krishna had said he was a little small for a Kshatriya, he was only like 5.5 meters high. Because after all, he was also born as a Vaishya. In any case, when Chanura, Mustika wanted to battle against Krishna in the form of cowherd boys. They said, my dear, Krishna Balaram said that this is not going to be a fair fight. After all, we're just cowherd boys, and you're big, strong wrestlers, as strong as thunderbolts. The crowd will be very disappointed to see such an unfair fight. Because at least the crowd at that time was a little more civilized than they are now. But Mustika and Chanura said, no, no, we know who you are, that you're the creators of the universe. So anyone who could understand that Krishna and Balaram were the creators of the universe must have been blessed in some way with intelligence. But at the same time, anyone who's going to fight with the people who created the universe couldn't be too intelligent. They deserve the kick in the head that they got. Maybe it stirred up their brains a little bit before they left their bodies. So, we're trying to become convinced that Krishna is actually at least as big as we're hearing he is. So that we'll surrender. Otherwise, we're going against his energy, trying to fight against him. And anyone who has some intelligence would not try to fight against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although we're trying. We may blame Mustika, Chanura, oh, you're fools. Why did you fight against Krishna? You could have surrendered. Or Putana could have surrendered. We couldn't claim that they were fools, but we're also fools. Because we're not surrendering either. We're against not only Krishna in the form of Krishna and Balaram, we're going against this whole material energy here, trying to defeat it. Karshati, it says in the Bhagavad Gita. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhutak sanatanam manakshastran indriyani prakriti stani karshati. The living entities in this material world are my fragmental parts, and they're all eternal. But due to conditioned life, they're struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So we're in the struggle against the material nature to stay alive, healthy, happy, prosperous, influential, whatever else we're trying to achieve, and we're all defeated. We get one body after another, and still we think we're going to make some progress in this hard struggle against the insurpassable material energy. So this is called illusion. So our main struggle is against illusion, and the only way of getting out of illusion, as we'll find out in this chapter, is to take shelter of Krishna. But here the demigods, like everyone else in this material universe, are taking shelter of Krishna so they can get back to their normal life again. It's controlling the universe. You can have a nice, peaceful life as a demigod and control the universe. But this canto is not going to leave us with that impression that the demigods, they become victorious, they drink the nectar, they get into a fight, and they become victorious. Anyhow, there's so many, then they lose again, and it's a whole mess, this place. So, if we accept that we're eternal, that there's a God who's not us, and that we have to surrender, here, this canto will give us some encouragement that we should surrender to Krishna and not try to go to the heavenly planets, get even a better position of enjoyment and control than we have now, thinking that that will make us successful. Because it doesn't make, according to this 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods never really become successful in that sense. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
I just wanted to ask, I was thinking, what is the result if we are doing some work in the temple, like chopping vegetables, and we don't think of Krishna at all? Is this karma?
Probably cut your finger. What's the result? At least you get something to eat. may not make any spiritual progress, but your belly will be filled up. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you for inspiring lecture. Could I please ask, you mentioned that some demons knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still wanted to fight with him. Could I ask, what is the necessary qualification for someone to realize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and what is the qualification to understand that it is not good to fight with him, to actually become favorably disposed toward him?
Well, I mean, everyone, whether it's Haranyakashipu, or whether it's Mustika Chanura, you have to hear from those who actually have knowledge. So, in the Vedic culture, which they come from, people talk about Vishnu all the time. Even the demons talk about him. So they heard that there's a controller of the universe, and he happened to be born in Vrindavan. And for that reason, even Kamsa, who conquered all the demigods and the demons in the universe, was afraid of him. So he must have been someone special. And how to become favorable? Well, associate with people who are favorable. And do some service, follow their directions. And then Krishna will reveal himself. And then as we get more experience in this, what association with Krishna means, when Krishna reveals himself, then the happiness we get from that will make us more favorable. Just like we're favorable generally towards our body because it gives us some happiness. So we can become favorable to Krishna when we get, when we, in his association, we feel happiness. And we get association with Krishna through the process of devotional service. Yes.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes. Looks like we lost Avadhuta Roy in that week.
Thank you.
He disappeared.
Thank you, Maharaj. Yeah. In this past time, we hear about the demigods fighting and trying to get the nectar and so on. Generally speaking, we hear that the demigods are in the mode of goodness. But here they seem to be totally in the mode of passion, rajagun. How is it that they're overcome by this mode?
When the devotees are in the class, they're in the mode of goodness. As soon as they leave the class, they become overwhelmed usually with another mode. So what to speak of the poor demigods?
Okay, I think that answers it. Thank you.
All right. Khwala. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.